This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, very, very nice. That is fantastic. What a way to start your day today. It's called These Days with Rudimental featuring Jess Glynn and Macklemore. You would recognize that voice, right? And also Dan Always. Kaplan, just to fill up. You know, because no song is made by just one person anymore. God forbid you're an artist who just does it on your own. Everything's a collaboration these days. These days. Okay, very nice. Just after 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com, Friday morning. It is the 6th of April. How does a check your rooster do?
What is that?
What a rooster? I can't make a sound like a rooster. I tried.
Sound like a hottie dog that was being vandalized by a lion. Gosh.
Jeez, what is going on?
Your people are
on?
So judgmental. Yeah. Don't judge. Didn't you hear what Batabile Dlamini said?
Okay.
Don't judge.
We'll try not to, but you're making it difficult for us.
God. All right, so Five Fingers for Marseille, which I spoke about earlier on, just a little over a week since we had our exclusive screening of Five Fingers for Marseille. Local film that both Ben and Sia couldn't stop talking about. It's also a great production. It premiered globally at the Toronto Film Festival in 2017 and showed at the London Film Festival, the BFI, at 2017 as well. It's got an all-star cast. Vuyo Dabula, Warren Masimola, Jerry Mofokeng, Nduduzi, Mabaso, Kenneth Nkosi, and Zethu Tlomo, to name just a few. Very excited about that. And apparently, I told you, a friend of mine was at the wedding of one of the producers, and Ben was saying that, you know, Sunshine Cinemas, those guys we spoke to not so long ago, it was probably about a year ago.
Yeah, with Rowan Pybus, yeah.
Yeah, they came in, and we spoke about how they show these movies in the townships, mm-hmm. you know, where we don't have cinemas and things.
Yeah, they just set up these mobile cinemas. Obviously, Sunshine Cinema, they go into Africa as well with solar power. And last night they actually showed Five Fingers for Marseille.
And you know what I just found out as well?
In Langa.
Langa.
I just found out that the movie is also going to get a release in the States as well. It will be released in the States from the 7th of September, starting in New York and LA, so these major, major cities, before moving on to an additional 15 American cities as well. So, I mean, how bigger can you get?
Fantastic.
Really, folks.
Five Fingers for Marseille. It's launching in cinemas nationwide today, Friday the 6th of April, 2018. But if you had come to our special premiere, you'd have been a week ahead of your time.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
we are insane, but we're saying.
Before I forget, yesterday I went for lunch with this friend of mine, and we both had ulterior motives. Our main motive was to see each other, obviously. She's one of my old varsity friends, and we've known each other a long time. She showed me a picture of us when we were at varsity that was on her phone. Oh, I hate looking at pictures of myself, but this one was bad.
How far back was it?
I was 18, 19? 19. I was 19 years old.
So
we've known each other
21?
That long. Ah, shut up.
Yeah, okay, sure. I won't note it.
But I saw this picture. I was like, ugh. I prefer the way I look now than I looked then.
Of course.
Huh?
Back then you had like drop Skittles for teeth. Ooh. All over the place.
No, some people grow into themselves.
I've tidied myself up. Ben's quite right. I've got better. I'm delighted. Isn't that the point?
True.
Right. Anyway.
No, I hope I Pharrell Williams my situation.
The other motive, the other reason I did this was because she has a valid TV license.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we discussed this.
Yeah. Can we get off the insane people, please?
No, here's the deal. Why should we be giving the SABC our money? Right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to give them any. I've got a TV license, but I owe them money, and I'm not going to pay. Because there's nothing on the SABC I need or want. I don't need a TV, actually. I didn't buy it for me. I bought it for someone who works for me. I have not used my TV this year, I told you. I might have used it with my Apple TV running through it playing some music this year. I don't want to lie. And I have seen some TV, but not at my house. Was at my parents' house.
No, but you saw TV, Gareth. Okay. If you see TV.
Right. Either way, I'm not paying the SABC. They can kush me and toch us around. So what I did was I went with this friend of mine. We used her license to buy a TV. And it was a pleasure. Got it done. Boom. Sorted. Not going to give the SABC money. It's like e-tolls. You shouldn't ever pay those. Don't. I know it sounds like civil disobedience, and there are a lot of people who like to follow the rules in society, and I sympathize with that. But these are get-rich-quick schemes for bad people in bureaucratic, parastatal organizations. You shouldn't be helping them. In fact, you should do everything in your power to let less money flow towards them. All right.
I actually got an email for the first time about TV licenses. You know, they used to SMS me, and I found a way of just blocking certain numbers.
Oh, yeah?
And that, or either that, or they've just I've broken their spirit because I don't get calls.
I think you've broken the spirit, Ben.
I got an email about the VAT increase.
Yeah, I got lots of those.
Where they just repeat themselves for about a paragraph, and they go, please note, annual TV license tariff remains unchanged at R265.
Oh, so suddenly they're back.
No, Tanya, I got an email about the VAT increase.
Yes, but the TV license has come into it. So they haven't completely given up on you, Ben.
Yeah, but this is such a half-hearted effort, basically telling me this, it's going to be the same amount. They haven't even told me what I owe. They just say what it is to other people.
So how's your first week of the new VAT increase, Ben? Have you enjoyed it? Have you had a good week? Huh? That 1% extra that they decided to add?
Maybe Anthea will shed more light, but I'm not fazed much by it at all. I don't want to stress about it, because at the end of the day, you'll still have to fill up your car, you'll still have to buy groceries, you'll still have to pay your bills.
Yeah.
But I just want politicians to know how embarrassing it is that because of them, VAT has changed 15%. Even though it's 1%, it's not going to affect the 1%, which is them. But you are so cuck that VAT had to change because you are so cuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what we're doing is we're paying. Apparently, this VAT increase doesn't even cover the cost of SAA's wasted money over the last couple of years.
Really?
Doesn't even cover the cost of the wasted money Dudumieni threw down a hole at SAA. Isn't that amazing? Anyway, let's not get stuck in these things as much as they're interesting. They're far more fun things here on the message board. This just came through on WhatsApp now. Ben, sorry I didn't hear you saying the number, but I don't pay attention when you talk.
Well, that's another lie. I mean, keep counting all the lies.
And then someone says, oh my God, that rooster, Gareth, it's more like a drowning pelican.
That's what I was thinking about, drowning pelican.
And then Natasha says, if my life had a soundtrack, that song that you just played would be playing now these days. Thanks, Gareth. Okay.
Oh.
Well, that's a good thing, right? It's a happy song.
I hope someday we stay together.
Guys, no one listens to the words. It just sounds happy.
All right. Someone I did listen to the words of yesterday, I heard Trevor Manuel. I saw a clip of him on the internet talking about Mamwini.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some strong words for Ace Magashule.
What did he say?
You want to hear it?
Okay.
There he is. This is Trevor Manuel.
So let me digress with a matter that I find rather annoying. It relates to the restoration of the house to which he was banished. House 802 in Patakashle in Brandfort. We're all aware that the restoration of the house as a museum was budgeted for a long time ago, and that project was never implemented. Now we are told by the former Premier of Free State, Mr. Elias Ekhubelo Magashule, that he has been working with the family since 2007. This is the same Premier who processed the approvals for the Estina degree, totaling some 220 million in 2 weeks. This is the same former Premier whose daughter is the beneficiary of a 130 million rand housing contract, but who now informs us that this minuscule project to restore the house to which our mother was banished has taken 11 years and can't get done. And even when he talks about, he says, well, everybody knows the money hasn't disappeared. Where is the money that was budgeted for?
And he's cross.
And even the numbers he talks about for the restoration of that very basic house, for the 3 million rand he talks about, what does he want to do? Does he want to gold plate the window frames? Does he want to put in a jacuzzi? Does he also want to air condition the house? No, that must remain that place of pain. It must be the place where we take our children and our public servants and remind them of the words of Madiba at his inauguration, never, never, and never again.
Yeah, so Trevor in full flight, huh? Having a go at Ace Magashule. Where is the money, is what he said.
You know what? If something needs to be said, then say it.
I love that. And he said this at a memorial that was held in St. George's Cathedral in Cape Town yesterday. I saw Patricia de Lille was there. A number of other people. It's going to be a couple of days where you're going to see some interesting people pitch up at these memorials. They're going to be obviously the great and good of society, but they're also going to be a couple of people who are very intimately involved in Winnie Mandela's latter years. People who were there when she wasn't the flavor of the day. People who supported her during the tough times. So let's keep our eyes open and see who those people are and what role they played. You know, she was quite helpful to a lot of people too in her twilight. She propped up a lot of people who needed support and help. She went to so many funerals, that woman. She was a real pillar of the community in Soweto. I know about three people who they're just humble people who don't have any political connections. They're not important people. And again, this is by no means like the epitaph of Winnie Madikizela Mandela, but it's personal stories I know through these people by one degree of separation, who they were burying their mothers, their fathers, and Winnie would come because she lived like two, three streets up. She would come to the funeral.
Mm.
She'd make her presence felt. She'd be there to support the family. Wouldn't make it about her. She would just come because that's what she did. She was part of the community. So you know what? Not all good, not all bad. We're humans.
True.
Instead of trying to eulogize and leonize and sanctify certain people and drive the others down, just chill. There'll be plenty of time for accounting for her life when history takes its place at the table and starts writing the story. And history will come.
Oh.
History will tell some stories, trust me. They're not all going to be good and they're not all going to be bad.
Do you think we're ever going to get to a point where more people speak out about what they know and what really happened?
I think we're already there, yeah.
Because I really feel like what Thabo Mbeki did this week in his interview
so was brave.
Only the tip of the iceberg, though.
So brave.
To just call a thing a thing, to speak from his experiences.
When everyone else is wallowing in... And by the way, most people who are deeply, deeply upset, but have no connection, no personal connection to Winnie, are really just doing it for themselves. It's all about them. It's them, they're wallowing in it. It's their moment to feel like somehow, in some indistinct way, they're connected to a massive national event. It's me, 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 me stuff. And you see so much of this on social media. But there is such bravery in someone like Thabo Mbeki, who we know didn't get along the best with Winnie, mm-hmm. being honest about his relationship with her. Would you prefer him to either A, shut up and pretend nothing's happened, which is quite disrespectful too, or would you like him to lie? Those are the options you're giving him. He's chosen neither of those. He's decided he's going to say what's really on his mind. Good for him.
Well, he's also not in a position to lie, because, I mean, we've seen the hand swatting and you can't.
They didn't like each other.
You can't.
Winnie had no time for him. He had no time for her.
Do you think Julius's relationship is genuine, as we have seen it?
What, with Winnie?
Yeah.
I think she really cared about him, and I think he found, of course,
because he was a misfit that could be manipulated.
Well,
everyone loves those kind of people in power.
Wow.
Well, yes, and politicians in particular. But I think Winnie was used by him, and he was used, she used, you know, went both ways. Oh, I'm complicating this. Yeah, but I think it was honest in terms of they both knew they could be useful to each other. It's like Ben was saying earlier, there's no such thing as altruism. But yeah, Julius is probably upset. Winnie was an ally of his.
Mm. And we actually haven't heard much from Zinzi this week.
No, I think the family
or Zolega.
That's, you know, good, because they don't need to. They're busy mourning. Those are the people who really are affected. That's their mother, their actual mother, not the mother of, like, in the imagination of their nation. You know, it's their real mother.
Mm.
If Zinzi and Zenani and the other members of the family are taking their time, I totally understand that. And it's those are the people we should be thinking about. They're still alive and with us. I mean, you want to hear stories. You want to hear about what Zinzi went through as well.
Sure.
Because there was a stage where both her parents were locked up. She was a little girl.
Mm.
You want to hear those stories. That's fascinating. Anyway, hey guys, I want to know what will happen to you if the TV license police rock up at your house and you don't have a license. Are they going to fine you or grab you by the nuts and take you to jail? Don't pay. I don't know what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do. I think, you know, I suppose at worst, whatever the value is of the TV license you haven't paid, I suppose they could get a sheriff to order that they can take those things to that value. So if you haven't paid R1,000 worth of TV fees, you can either, maybe, I don't know, they'd have to have a warrant. I don't know if it's a warrant or they'd have to have the sheriff there. I don't know. But it would be a massive amount of work for them. Plus, good luck. I'm not letting you in my house. I'll meet the TV license guy at my door with a shotgun. And let's see who lasts longer. Huh? Don't you think?
You know, the other day you shared that video of, and I'm going to paraphrase, what anti-gun people do when they're in a situation.
Oh, that's funny. And it's like two old people.
Yes.
And they're busy going pew pew yes. pew
with their hands because they have, like, no guns.
Well,
because really that's what I would do. Then you meet them with the shotgun and meet them at the door with my
yeah. And don't get me wrong, I'm not one of those like guns because I don't believe that everybody should have a gun, and I don't believe that that everybody needs a lot of guns. But this was quite funny. It's how gun control protesters protect their homes from intruders. And two old people standing around, and they're pointing with their hands.
Bang, bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang. Right. And the woman is pretty funny. She looks like a gran.
That's convincing, right? That will do the trick.
Yeah.
That'll scare people off.
Yeah. All right, what else is going on?
Well, can we actually touch on a bit of Zuma's night vigil? Because there's, 2 hours left until he's meant to make his first appearance in court.
Those people are going to wake up with such a babalaz.
Mm.
Just judging by the videos they were taking.
They're just passed out. That's all they're doing right now. As you were saying yesterday, Gareth, supporters of Jacob Zuma included yesterday university students who were supporting him in the night vigil, and actually his controversial son, Edward.
Oh.
And all of these people collectively, as Justice was saying, one of the things they weren't allowed to do was wear ANC uniform or colors, et cetera, et cetera. They all defied that by donning the ANC colors at the night vigil that took place in Durban.
Sure.
Now, this is what Edward so eloquently says, right? Because he's trying to be slick and smart.
Yeah,
of course. Says that he wasn't defying ANC instructions because the ANC t-shirt he was wearing was a personal item. Mm. I am not a member of the ANC, although I am here to support the former president as a citizen of the country, he says.
Tell that you are his son and you have benefited as illegally as he has from his position, and you're a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting him.
He says that he hopes that residents of Nkandla, Zuma's hometown, would also be part Nkandla. Of the would be part of the activities. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
those are the last people who should pitch up to support the president, don't you think? Those are the absolute last people that should pitch, because those are the ones who have to look at his goddamned huge household while they're living in a rondavel. If they're lucky.
I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of someone who does support him. And I'm trying to figure out how you support him given the facts. Because clearly you're still misguided. And what are you guided by then? What hope do you still have in the man?
Well, I saw an interesting...
What good did he do
for you? I saw a really cool tweet about this morning. There's a guy I follow who said, basically, Jacob Zuma is riding on this idea that he's still being oppressed by some kind of you know, powerful, shadowy, apartheid era creation. He's riding on that. But this is a black intellectual that I follow on Twitter. I'm not going to give out the name or anything because a whole lot of people who might disagree with him will suddenly start pillorying the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's not the truth anymore. This is an ordinary garden variety criminal who's going to court to defend himself against not one, not two, not 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, not even 100, not even 500, but 783 or 784 charges of fraud, racketeering, and corruption. This is not some petty thief. This is a full-on white-collar criminal. And until he is proven guilty or innocent, it's okay for us to throw that around. Why would people feel sorry for him is the question. He was the most powerful man in the country by far. At one point, he was so powerful, he was hiring and firing cabinet ministers at his own discretion.
Late at night.
Where everybody in the country had to bear the brunt of his decision-making, or the lack thereof, and our currency tanked, and the value of what 100 rand was worth in 2008 was chopped to pieces by the time he had made these decisions. I mean, don't let's fool ourselves into thinking he wasn't the most powerful man in South Africa once. So how can you also be a victim? When you've twisted organizations like the Hawks so that they can't, I mean, before that it was the Scorpions, he disbanded them. Mm-hmm. He just disbanded an entire investigative unit because they were inconvenient for him. Couldn't get away with his crimes. He tried to change and manipulate the National Prosecuting Authority. He tried to change and manipulate the judiciary. This was a very powerful man. He can't be a victim as well. If you're the president, you can't be a victim. If you're a victim, you can't be the president. You can't have both. So choose. Watch him go into full victim mode here. I'm going to predict one or two things.
Okay.
Number one, he's going to want to do a lot of what he's doing in Zulu. Because then he can say that, you know, people don't understand. They've misinterpreted him.
Okay.
They haven't understood him correctly. Second of all, he's going to say that it's everyone else's fault but his. That it was the former old regime, that it's his ANC comrades who sold him out, that it's a shadowy third force. He's going to blame people who are dead, who we can't necessarily, like Joe Modise and people like that who were ministers of defense when the arms deal was signed. He's going to dig up whatever he has to not take responsibility. This is a man who is incapable of accountability of any kind. Watch this happen. And forget ever seeing any of that money again. It's all been squirreled away into international bank accounts. We don't even have an idea of how much money he's stolen over the years and how many of his compatriots and his colleagues in theft have stolen. We only know that there are billions missing from the national treasury that were meant to have gone to coal providers, in the case of Eskom and this Tegeta deal, the arms deal, various smaller ones down the line, which, if you add them all together, total quite big amounts. And that's just the stuff we know about. You know, there's probably lots more that's hidden away. So I can't wait for all of this to come out in court. There's going to be a long, long trial.
There's no money that I'm going to be paying back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually just feel bad for people who support him.
Please don't.
Hear me out. The people who do support him, and I'll speak for even the likes of people who live in Kandla, because that just shows how simple manipulating people through politics is. You know, there are 55 million people in South Africa, and it's so easy for us to get caught in our bubble, let's just say, of 5 million people getting engaged in enlightened intellectual conversations, seeing both sides of an argument, and having a chat around that. But for a old lady in Kandla who gets wooed and swayed by what Jacob Zuma says, and that is the type of person who still supports him.
But let's also be careful. I mean, just because someone is uneducated and they live in a rural area doesn't mean they're necessarily not street smart. Yeah, they can tell when they're being lied to.
It's definitely a blanket statement. They know
when their husband lies to them. They know when their children lie to them. They know. Some old lady in Nkandla is not a fool. My worry is, because that sounds a lot like, you know, sort of patronizing these rural people. I don't mean it that way,
but yeah.
But Jacob Zuma is a crafty, manipulative, charming, and Machiavellian politician. He's no idiot.
I think that charm left ages ago.
Watch, he's going to pull out Umshinewam again. You watch all of this stuff on the steps of the court. It's going to be a dog show today.
Emphasis on show. He's putting on that show.
He's a showman. That's it. Yes, exactly. And he's going to pull out all the tricks he's got in his bag. And he's got lots of tricks, this guy. He's tricksy. And to use Gollum from Lord of the Rings' word. Tricksy!
I just discovered this now as I was doing my research into this. Actually, we are talking about 783 charges as the big thing. But actually, 783 is the number of times payments were made to Shabir Sheikh.
That's just Shabir.
That's only Shabir Sheikh.
So we're talking about stuff that happened before he became president. All right?
Guys.
We don't even know the half of what happened after that.
Way more.
So just pick a number. And multiply it by a billion. Any single digit number or double digit number, it's up to you. And multiply it by a billion, and you're probably in the ballpark. That's a big range.
I don't know. I actually just don't know.
Well, it's fascinating. Let's see what happens. All right. Tune into cliffcentral.com because in the next couple of minutes, I don't know why I'm saying tune in if you're already listening to us. But in the next couple of minutes, we'll be meeting some students who are part of the Nelson Mandela Debating Challenge. I'm going to introduce you to them in a moment or two. It's a national youth debating competition that will honor Madiba's legacy by building a foundation for future leaders. They've partnered, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, with Tsimong to host 50 high school learners from all provinces across South Africa who arrived in Johannesburg for the immersive tournament recently. I like debates, sensible debates with smart people. Where you could sit around and the contest of ideas takes place. You have people arguing articulately in order to put their version of a point of view, a take on a situation, a circumstance, an ideology, a discussion in the most cogent fashion so that they can convince people who are unconvinced that their argument is the right one. Doesn't that sound like a good idea, Ben?
Pretty much, Gareth, it does. And it's a very nice contrast to our previous story.
They've established the National Schools Debates Competition, which will be implemented in support of a coordinated framework to celebrate Nelson Mandela's centenary, where it matters the most, in schools. The Nelson Mandela Foundation has adopted the debating competition and provides financial support as a part of the Mandela centenary celebrations, because this year Madiba would have been 100. He would have been 100 years old on July the 18th this year. So the debating challenge is taking place from the 3rd of April to the 9th of April 2018. So it's happening in the next few days. And it began as a national vlogging competition that will see a team of 5 debaters being selected to represent each province. The national competition will be held in various Madiba-inspired venues in Gauteng. That's enough of that info. Let me meet the people. That's what I'm interested in. All right, your people. Who we got here? Say hello. What's your name?
Hello. My name is Mahlaku Khomosana.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm very pleased to meet you. What's your name?
My name is Thea Ernest. I'm from KZN. It's such an honor to meet you.
Nice to see you. And what's your name?
My name is Naledi Sanandile. I'm from Western Cape.
Hi, Naledi. And you are?
My name is Madzanga. I'm from Limpopo.
Madzanga, nice to see you.
And I'm Hayden Anderson, and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Oh, good, the Eastern Cape. That's a little bit of representation.
Yes,
all right.
Representation.
All right, and you?
Bongani Masilela.
Bongani, let me just turn on your mic. There we go.
Okay, cool. Bongani Masilela. I'm the founder and director at Timung, the company that's facilitating the program.
Tell me about Timung and how you got to meet these young people.
Okay, so Timung is a company that creates educational products by using debating and public speaking as a medium of instruction. So we partner with large organizations, companies, civil society and government who have content that they want to distribute to young people.
Right.
And we use debating as a medium of teaching because it gives young people an incentive to want to learn about the thing that's being taught to them, because there's a competition element versus sitting in a workshop and having to listen to boring content for 2 hours. So we've partnered with everyone from APSA, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and Constitution Hill to use the content that they have to teach it through debating.
You got like a website or something people can go to?
www.timung.co.za.
And you spell that T-S-H-M-I-M-O-N-G.
T-S-H-I-M-O-N-G.
I-M-O-N-G, yes. Right. Okay, so we meet young people who have great brains and who are able to articulate great thoughts and who are able to convince people who are maybe not sure where they stand on a certain issue about their point of view. I think that's very powerful because I meet a lot of people who don't really have an opinion, don't have a position, they don't think much about the world. They're kind of more interested in likes and shares and being followed and being popular. So this is obviously something that appeals to a lot of people who are young and old, because you want to see brilliance, right? And there's some fairly brilliant debaters here, otherwise they wouldn't have woken up this morning and come through to see us or be taking part in this competition. Is there a prize?
there are awesome prizes, but we're trying to keep those on the down low for now. We want to surprise them on Sunday. Yes, but there
cash?
Are prizes involved. I don't know. It might be cash. I don't know.
Gold?
We'll see. It might be a plane. We'll see.
A car? That would be nice.
Yeah.
All right. So how did you get involved in debating?
I started debating very early, actually, in primary, because my English teacher said I'm just so loud and opinionated, I should put it to good use.
Those used to be insults, but that's actually a compliment.
Right. So yeah. I joined debating, I think it was in grade 6, and I've just continued throughout high school.
And what about you, Thea? How did you get involved?
Very similar situation, you know. I was in grade 7. I was a very boisterous young child who was very...
You seem so shy now.
What well, no, not really. Who was highly opinionated, you know.
Okay.
And in primary school, I was often condemned for my highly opinionated nature,
what
you know.
What kinds of things got you into trouble? What sort of opinions?
Well,
give me an example.
Well, just simply being very vocal about certain issues, like, you know, things like calling out racism, like people... who were...
But that's so easy these days.
Yeah, but I mean, when I was younger, young people just didn't, they weren't used to people who were so highly opinionated.
Especially then. How old are you now?
Yeah, I'm now 15. I'm in grade 10.
Wow.
Then I was probably a 13. Yeah.
13, you were calling out the bad people.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So I got into debating as a way to constructively, you know, voice these opinions. And because of my... passion for the acquisition of knowledge and applying this knowledge, I feel that debating is an excellent platform to do that. So that's some of the main reasons why I got into debating.
Matlako, what about you?
Madzanga.
You're Madzanga, you're Matlako.
Yes.
Sorry. Madzanga, tell me about yours, your experience of how this all started. All
right. So, like, contrary to, like, these two stories, I was, like, a very shy child. I was very quiet, didn't really want to speak. I was just, like, in my own bubble. And my mom was, like... She was worried about the fact that I don't really like do stuff at school besides go to school. So she kind of forced me to do something, and I'm not into sports at all. So I kind of didn't have a choice. So I started debating, and like I started debating, and the first week I was just I fell in love. Like I just loved it. Like it was like all these things that I didn't know I wanted to say. Debate made me realize I want to say these things, and I'm passionate about, you know,
what's
speaking.
What's the best thing about a debate? Is it when you just know it's going well and you feel like you've made a really good point and people applaud? When is the moment that you feel the best about this? Or is it afterwards when you go, yeah, I think that came across quite well?
I think the best moment in debating or like for me personally.
When you smash your opponent.
Well, that's awesome too. I mean, it's always great to just be like, you know they lost because you were like right. that awesome. Okay. But like also, for me, like the best thing about debating is when they give you like a motion to debate about and you're completely on the side that you personally don't agree with and you have to advocate for something that you wouldn't normally think about. Ah. So it forces you to have a different perspective on everything.
That's brilliant because I often meet people who give me the impression that they've never heard the other side of the argument. That they've never heard a good argument against their own position.
Yeah.
And those people go into a battle without any weapons. It's crazy, true. Right?
Yeah.
So what about you, Hayden, when you get involved in these things? What kind of issues get you fired up? I mean, could I give you any topic and you'd go and research it and you'd be prepared to debate it even if you don't feel that that's the kind of position you would take normally?
I feel like that's the whole point of debating.
That's the challenge, yeah. right?
Because I feel like we get so complacent with our points of views, and especially in the society that we live in, it's more like, because we don't ever really receive a lot of challenges if we're living that low-key lifestyle. We're really content to just go through our lives. But when I got involved in debating, because I had a very narrow view of life. I used to believe, like, you know, the United Kingdom is just great because they had this really cool empire. But I didn't actually delve into, like, the intricacies of what that empire really did. And I started to realize that there's more than one perspective. I started to realize that you can look at things from not only one point of view, there are all these different actors that are involved in a situation. And that really, because it really broadened my horizons and that opened up my entire mind to really how the world actually works. And that's like the whole key part of debating. It's that epiphany when you realize that this side has valid arguments, but so yeah. does this side. And then you've got to weigh these up to see which one is actually
valid. But that sometimes those are not equal. Like sometimes an yeah. argument might be, it might be an opposing argument. It might have some validity, but it's not an equivalent argument.
Yeah. It's all yeah. about what we prioritize in our society at that moment in time. Now, and what's going to improve our future.
Now, Lady, do you feel that most people who have opinions have done the homework? Like a lot of people you meet every day, you meet someone who's got an opinion, right? And a lot of these people don't necessarily do the research. Like, there's work that's required. If you're going to be a good debater, if you're going to be someone who can explain a position in a cogent sense, you need to spend a bit of time doing research, right? You can't just go into this without any idea.
Yeah, for me, I feel like most people don't actually do the research, but then they just listen to other people's opinions, and then they formulate their own little opinion based on like what other people are saying.
Yeah.
And
you see a lot of that on social media too.
Yes, yeah. you do. And then when you start contradicting them, they don't have any things to support what they're saying. They just repeat and repeat the opinion. And then you try to ask them, like, substantiate why you're saying this. Give me proof as to why you're saying this. And they never like have the opinion, like yeah. the substantiation for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite curious about any of you having an experience where people, because if you debate, you get quite passionate about things, right? That doesn't mean you're arguing. It doesn't mean you're looking for a fight. But sometimes some people interpret that as you being very, and particularly there's like a bit of a sexist thing in society. If a woman is very opinionated, they immediately assume that she's strident, she's full of herself, that she's, a bitter woman, or she's angry, or she's... Do you get that a lot? Like when you're passionate about something and you feel you have a certain take on an issue in society or in the news or whatever.
Yeah.
That it does happen. Like it happens a lot. So when debating opens up like your mind to different perspectives, you have like a wider range of information and different things. And when you like call out ignorance, people feel attacked because they've never had to like substantiate
account for themselves.
Yeah, so they feel very, very attacked, and so they like attack the one thing that they can attack about what you're saying, and they call you emotional or oversensitive, or I was just saying you don't need to argue with me. So when they feel attacked about like the opinions that they've never had to account for, they you know back you into a corner, and they you know they cling on to the easiest thing that they can, which is to say that you're too emotional or you're always arguing, it's not necessary.
Now, Mahlako, what about if people say that you have to have a certain opinion because you are a woman or because you are black or because you are X, Y, and Z? You know, this idea of identity politics, the idea that you need to follow the party line on something because that's where you come from. In other words, that your individual experience doesn't matter.
Well, I think that's problematic because a lot of that is rooted in just stereotypes. But, like, you can't even bring across an opinion or make a statement without someone bringing your race into it. And most people think it's always a black woman that's going to talk about her race and her gender. And it's people say, like, I can't just make a generic statement. Someone will always say, yeah, so there she goes again. Oh, my gosh, is everything about you? I'm like, I didn't even mention the fact that I'm black. Can I just say something without my gender playing a part?
They're projecting their stuff onto you, right?
So it is problematic because it feels like your opinions aren't validated and you're always trying to look for a fight. You're always trying to talk about politics even when you're not.
Thea, how important is confidence if you're going to be a good debater?
Confidence is actually one of the most essential tools that you need to come across as very eloquent and persuasive, you know. On the flip side, if you're not confident and you're looking to boost your confidence, which is essential for the working world and development of interpersonal skills, you would obviously get into debating because it allows you to get out of your shell a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to get exposed to so many facets of the world that you would have never imagined you would be exposed to. And the amount of confidence you gain from and the amount of personal fulfillment you gain from constructively voicing your opinion, having your opinion heard, is just an amazing feeling. And I feel like if you want to like increase your confidence levels or like just gain more confidence and become more eloquent, you would definitely get into debating. It's very essential.
Yeah, I think what you guys are doing is terrific. I love hearing from smart people, and I love hearing from people who are willing to espouse sometimes unpopular opinions, because that's the really hard thing to do. Yeah. If you're going to be debating on the side that everybody in the room is on, that is going to sound like wallpaper, even if you're really good at it. It's the voice that is in opposition to that we need to listen to the loudest. You think so?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just want to say
even
something.
If we disagree, by the way.
Yes,
you don't need to always agree with something in order to understand it or pay attention to it.
I'd just like to bring something to the table here a little bit. We had a discussion, I think it was yesterday or the day before, like we had a session with Bongani and his team, and we were discussing Nelson Mandela and his legacy, you know. And we had a very contentious and heated debate and conversation about Nelson Mandela and his legacy. And what I picked up from that conversation is that not everybody feels that Nelson Mandela and his legacy was good. And I felt like all debaters in that room were not afraid to voice that opinion, regardless of who from the foundation was present. They were so open and so vulnerable and so honest with what they felt. And I feel like in a country like South Africa, where the youth play such a big role in social progression and development, it was so necessary to have that conversation because you get to see, hold on, there's a flip side to everything, even the good. So it was amazing to be exposed to that. And I mean, before we continue, I'd like to thank the foundation.
Sure,
And Shimong for everything, because it's one thing to bring smart people together in like a space where you can,
can't say you're smart. Some people are going to I'll say it. You're smart.
Thank you. Well, bring us all together in such a regard, you know. But it's like I don't think the foundation understands how much it means to us because it's just such a phenomenal platform.
I want us to start a debate podcast. I want us to put together where you guys can have these debates and people can hear them, because you can only fill a room with so many people.
Yeah.
If you have a podcast, you can go out to millions. Mm. We need to put this together and we need to do it ASAP.
Yes, definitely.
Get two people every week, or a team of people on one side, team of people on the other side, and get all these big issues in society debated intelligently and in a sensible way by people who are not emotional about the results.
Yeah.
And then we can figure out our way forward.
We're
all so caught up in how we feel about things that we stop thinking.
Yeah. That's the only way we can create conversation and discourse about these ideas. It's the only way.
Well, I'm very impressed. Naledi, thank you very much. And Hayden, thank you. Thea, Mahlako, and Mazanga, thank you so much for coming. It's a pleasure to meet all of you. We will continue these conversations because I think what you guys are doing is terrific. And congratulations to the Nelson Mandela Foundation for getting behind this, and to Tsimung, who are an organization that partners with them to create communications platforms that encourage critical thinking. And we will start doing more of this stuff here on cliffcentral.com. You don't need mainstream media for this stuff. You want to be here. So let's get it going, all right?
All right.
You guys really are the future, and I'm not saying that in some patronizing way. Take it on. Good work. All right, very, very nice. It is 8:08. We've got George coming in a moment or two for our weekly updates. That I always love seeing George because I know it's Friday. See, I keep these debaters here. I want to talk to them afterwards. I'll get to meet these people properly. That was cool. Don't you love hearing smart people? Always makes me feel better about things. And there are lots and lots of very smart young people who will make this country work. It's constant. It's like it's 70-year-olds like Jacob Zuma who we need to worry about, not the young people. Don't you think they're cool, huh, George?
I think they're awesome.
George Meany's here, everybody.
How's it?
George Meany, the CEO of Auto Trader. They also host a show here on cliffcentral.com called Auto Central, and it's on Monday. But before we get to that,
I'd like them to debate. Sorry, Gareth. I'd like them to debate which is the best car in South Africa.
That's tough. Hey? That is tough because if you go by which is the most popular car, that's not necessarily the best.
Exactly. Exactly. And that goes down to exactly what they were talking about.
And if you go for the most expensive car, that's not necessarily the
best.
That's
very true.
So I don't know. I mean, Ben would be a good one to field an answer from on this one.
Oh, hi, George. No, Gareth, I'm not in the last couple of months. I've lost touch.
Well, you still have your favorites.
Yeah. I mean,
what would you say the best car in South Africa is?
Debatable. If you look at popularity, probably somewhere between the VW and the Toyota Corolla.
Okay.
If you look at reliability, probably the Toyota Corolla.
Okay.
Or the Toyota.
The Toyota Uber.
That's yes, also true.
That is the Toyota Uber. And whenever I see those cars now, I think it's an Uber driver.
Yeah.
But I don't think those cars are used by mistake, to be honest. They are really reliable cars.
Okay.
Car of the future, probably in this country, the Nissan Leaf.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they doing okay? Are they selling?
They're not selling very much, but they're the only mainstream electric car, you know, really that South Africa has. Okay. You know, the other electric car, the I-Pace, is not here yet. Others are exotic cars. So I think that's the only one that's going to be.
How can you mention car in South Africa without mentioning Buckies?
True.
People love Buckies.
True.
Everybody loves a Bucky.
Isuzu.
Yeah.
A very, very popular Bucky for a long, long time. Still is.
All right. So George has got a list of things for us to talk about this morning, and we always try to wrap up the week with a few thoughts that might get the petrol heads excited, but might also get the rest of us who think of motoring as part of our lives interested. So what do we got?
Well, everybody knows about the VAT increase that hit us this month.
Wasn't it great?
Oh, awesome. 1%. I mean, my opinion about tax in the country, you know, my 2 cents worth, per se.
Yeah.
Is,
it's a lot more than 2 cents you're paying, but yeah. Right.
I think, you know, VAT increases are the tax, should be the tax of the future, not employees tax, not company tax, because it is at the moment that you spend the money that everybody pays tax.
Well, I have a very smart friend who actually works for a big consulting firm in the US. He always proposed that we should have what we call a transaction tax, where you've charged a 2-3% transaction tax on every transaction that you take part in. So if it's you're buying a packet of cigarettes, there's a fee on that. If you're doing a massive merger with two companies, there's a tax on that. And that seems the most equitable because it would invariably be variable depending on the nature of that deal, that transaction, and therefore would be very equitable and fair.
Exactly.
If someone is poor, they're doing small transactions.
Yes.
If someone is rich, they're doing big transactions. So everybody gets taxed. Seems like a fair way to go about it because in that process, there's work behind the transaction, and that work is being paid for in tax.
Exactly. And that's almost like VAT. You pay the tax when you spend the money.
There we go.
When the money changes hands, that's when you pay the tax.
All right, but how does this affect us
and
our cars?
Yes, so the car industry, believe it or not, the passenger vehicle segment had a boom in March.
Wow.
And probably linked to people preempting this tax for or VAT for April, VAT increase for April, because we had a kicker month in March. where we sold 49,233 cars for the month of March, 1.1% up from last year March. And remember, towards the end of last year, car sales were in decline.
Yeah, well, that's, you see, this is where it's sometimes they force you to buy a car. Because they, you know, they're going to be more expensive next month.
They're going to be more expensive. But it was also helped by a 0.25% reduction in the official interest rate in March, remember. Yeah. So, sure. And then also Moody's didn't downgrade us and kept our credit rating at investment grade credit rating.
Okay. Well, we'll take it. Any increase in car sales is probably a reflection of an improvement in the economy.
Anything. Yes. Sure. Well, that's the boring stuff out of the way. More interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Have you ever disobeyed a traffic sign?
No, yes, no.
Lies, you liar. Goddamn liar.
And you know that...
Of course you have. Everybody has. Have you, George?
Of course everybody has. I mean, how many times have you been in a rush and that stop sign just doesn't get stopped at?
Well, especially late at night when there's no other cars and you can make sure that you're on, you know, a safe intersection to do a crossing at, and you stop and you treat it as a four-way stop even though it's a traffic light.
Yeah, yeah, because you feel safer doing that, right?
Well, you can make any excuse you like if, if you want to break the law, but it's not necessarily right.
So linked to that, you know that this demerit system is on the table for discussion at the moment. It's an R2 bill.
Haven't they been talking about this for years?
They have. It's passed by the National Assembly last year, September, and it's now with the National Council of Provinces.
Okay.
And currently being debated in public hearings.
Okay.
But what's interesting, and this is the part that that I think is part of the heat of the debate, what's interesting is that the ETOL signs on the highways are legal traffic signs.
Yeah.
And ignoring them by not paying your bill could get you demerits on your license.
So what? Then the whole country's going to be driving with so many demerits that the whole system's going to fail just like ETOL's failed. Don't they realize this is a bad idea? Don't they realize that anything attached to ETOLs is also going to be disobeyed?
But think about this. A route to Pretoria and back from Johannesburg, you pass 5 gantries there and back. So 2 trips to Pretoria and you lose your license.
Well, that's exactly why it's unimplementable. Because they'll be arresting every other motorist on the roads. There won't be anyone left. There'll be one old granny and an Uno.
On top of that, there are 3.6 billion. There is 3.6 billion rand outstanding in ETOLs.
Yeah, it's never gonna. You're never getting that money. David Makura, the premier of Gauteng, he says this is a stupid debate. It's a pointless exercise. We got to can ETOLs. He said that. The premier of Gauteng. We know that the DA who run Johannesburg and Pretoria, same thing. Think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit.
Can ETOLs. So the next thing is Google did something interesting, probably in order to get you to watch their or look at their screens or their application more, is at the beginning of April, and this wasn't an April Fool, they launched via Google Assistant, Chromebook, and Google Maps, a Where's Waldo initiative you could take part in finding Waldo on Google Maps. And you can go and look now. It's still live.
Why did Google need us paying more attention to them? Aren't they such attention whores already?
They are. They are.
We don't need to be on there. Just ignore this. This is a ploy.
No, but what's when you're trying to find Waldo and...
is there a guy dressed as Waldo?
Yes.
Okay.
So, well, Waldo, the little dog. And but what I'm concerned about is if you're using Google Maps to navigate and you're trying to find Waldo and drive, that's a bit dangerous.
It's like that Pokemon Go thing where people were smashing into streetlights and, oh, you know, goodness. And just stopping their car in the middle of the highway to catch a Pokemon Go. It's ridiculous.
Is Pokemon Go still going?
No.
No? Is it
no,
dead?
No, nobody cares anymore. It lasted 3 weeks. It had its moment. Everybody, you know, there were advertising agencies I remember having meetings with during those 3 weeks saying, this is the future. We're putting 29% of our budget into this. Where are they now? I hope those people were fired.
And then second to last, Apple has applied for a patent to let drivers have a virtual reality experience inside a car as a passenger while driving. These patents cover VR systems from headsets to virtual screens inside the car so that your passengers can have an experience of their choosing while inside the car as a passenger. They could be hang gliding, they could be skydiving, they could be sitting on a river, on a boat in a river.
This could be dangerous. I've seen people with these VR headsets on, and sometimes they're so in it that they move forward or they move backwards or they fall to the left or they fall to the right. And if you're in a car, that could cause some injuries. Don't you think? You've seen this. You've got a VR headset.
I think I don't have a VR headset. Actually, it's probably one of the only things I don't have. But yeah, they could knock the driver out. I think it's dangerous. But Apple is very very well known for their patents, and they love registering these patents.
Do you know who's going to get this VR thing right? The porn industry. They're going to get it right first, and because there's most incentive for
don't
them.
You mean they're the ones that've got it right?
Well, they've already got it right.
You of can course, yeah, they're in it first.
But if you do it in VR, not in just 3D or 2D.
No, but the porn industry's been doing it for like 2-3 years.
They haven't got it right yet. It's not people aren't going, this is the most incredible experience ever.
Get different friends, Gareth.
Oh, okay. You've got friends who say it's the best experience ever.
Chat to John T. We could. It's Friday.
All right.
People are spending a lot of money in this.
I'm telling you.
Asians all over it.
But that's the point. That's where all the really serious development and research is happening. Because if they can get that right, and that's kind of a real experience, everywhere else will get real.
Well, virtual reality inside a car, I don't know.
It could be fun.
It could be fun.
Especially if you're on a long, boring drive.
Yes. Durban to Joburg to Cape Town.
Yeah.
That is a long, boring drive. And then lastly, Lewis Hamilton in the Formula One is gutted. This weekend is the Bahrain Formula One Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get to that earlier. I'm sorry if I missed that.
So he's absolutely gutted. They had apparently what is a computer glitch in one of their software programs that miscalculated the entry and exit speeds of the pit lane. And that's what they're putting it down to. But I don't think there is anything they could have done to stop Sebastian Vettel from passing Lewis Hamilton, because the safety car was out. And if Lewis Hamilton was driving at the safety car speed limit, even if the software had told them that this was going to happen, there was nothing they could do about it. Maybe bring Hamilton into the pits, but I think they're just a little bit of a sore loser.
How much of that is down to how heavily do these guys rely on that technology now?
Absolutely heavily. I think everything is electronic.
The Formula One drivers of the future are going to be gamers.
Well, I don't know. I hope
doesn't
not.
That make sense?
They
probably will
to
be
to a certain degree, but
like
I hope
VR
not.
VR gamers.
I hope not. It already exists.
Yeah. I'm just thinking if we're so reliant on the software and the technology at the moment to be able to pull off a great drive around an actual, like, real life track, it's only a matter of time before someone who has been spending every waking hour since the age of 5 gaming is going to be a much better driver than a Lewis Hamilton.
Potentially. I don't know if you can pull off the G's in VR, like Hamilton and the guy's experience, but
okay, maybe. Be an interesting thing to watch.
Maybe.
Very, very exciting. I love
this.
That's
it.
That's plenty to chew on for the weekend.
Cool.
Thank you, George. Always nice to catch up with you. There's George Meany with a look at what's going on in not just motoring, but interesting stories from all over the world. Hey, by the way, David Beckham is one of the interviews that we did in the last couple of weeks. And if you haven't heard it yet, you need to go and listen to it. It's all on cliffcentral.com. He's many things, a world-famous footballer, father style icon, the guy who made tattoos mainstream. He's also refined and cool, just like his own whiskey, Haig Clubman. It's all about changing the game, breaking the rules, doing things differently. We had an unconventional, unradio conversation with Beckham about Haig Clubman, his family, being an entrepreneur, breaking the rules. You can download that podcast now on cliffcentral.com. Haig Clubman, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Hey, aren't the lifestyle home and garden people coming in today to do sex talk with Jonty? Sia, what's the story there? Yes. I saw they've got plants that are shaped like penises.
Listen, I'm not saying much except for the fact that I was here yesterday afternoon as they were delivering all the things that they'll be talking about on John T's show today. There were candles.
Oh, the sex show.
There were soft plants that can be incorporated into the bedroom.
So this place is going to look like a very, very fancy bordello.
They are very creative. Let me give the team at Lifestyle that. I want to see how the conversation's going to go. Because actually, who knew that a little light, soft plant could be incorporated into certain activities?
It's all about ambience.
Exactly.
Create an environment where people want to be, but which is thriving.
There's also science to it as well. Like there are certain plants that give you oxygen, and that's what you need in the bedroom to
certain
carry on
plants
going.
That are aphrodisiac.
There we go. Plants, lights, candles, here it all on Sex Talk.
Sex Talk today with John T. Searle. That's going to be a live show on cliffcentral.com this morning. If you miss it, you can always get the podcast, but try and listen to it live today. They're going to have the guys from Lifestyle in to tell you how you can make your environment sexier. Very cool. And we've been to their place, so now coming to our place, they're going to turn the studio into something very exciting. That's all happening later on this morning. Casper's in. We've got the Just Now Comedy Experience.
Gilmore Tea
and plenty of other good stuff.
O'Neill
is on today. Yeah, that's right. And don't forget O'Neill live music collaborations every Friday on the O'Neill Africa Experience. Loads of stuff. It's Friday. It's best day on cliffcentral.com. Here's what you need to know. Jacob Zuma is finally in court today to try and answer for the 783 charges against him. He'll be welcomed by a load of drunk people who spent the night outside the court, but this could be a one-day-only thing because there isn't much budget for supporting him this time. The trial could last 783 days, as Zuma will no doubt look to pervert proceedings as much as possible, so he's saving his money for that instead of sandwiches and taxi fare for some song singers and flag wavers. In other news, Donald Trump has been tracking the Stormy Daniels story in the media and doing so at the expense of taxpayers. Mark Zuckerberg says he's also been very busy doing the same on Facebook, and he's been having some very interesting conversations with high-profile people around it. Zuckerberg then backtracked, saying he doesn't have any proof, though, as he doesn't read private messages on Facebook. That would be weird, and he's not weird. His Uncle Larry's weird, and also Ligavan. And finally, Conor McGregor is in trouble. After watching Liverpool defeat Man City in the Champions League this week, he attacked a bus of his own carrying UFC fighters and support staff. Sources close to McGregor said the fighter is really struggling to spend all of his money at the moment, so he feels getting arrested and sued could help him out a bit. What a problem to have. All right, have an excellent Friday. We will see you on Monday, bright and early. Ben's not here Monday. He's going on a nice romantic anniversary weekend with Daniela.
Yes. Very nice.
And we support that wholeheartedly. So that's all coming up. We'll no doubt get a play-by-play on Tuesday. All right. Have a happy day. Thanks for joining us.
This is CliffCentral.com.